the township form of government before the turn of the century. Was the supervisor a powerful person, or
at that time, my father was held the office of treasurer, also of a clerk, and he was either of these offices. I didn't hold them both at the same time, but that was during Lincoln's administration. That's why father, I guess, became a Republican. He had a high honor for President Lincoln, you see, and they had their supervisor, their clerk, two justices, and constable, and an overseer. I guess at one time they had a school commissioner, local, and an old doc kid, their school commissioner, before my time, of course. But there's so many things, and I've heard father say they had enough people there to form an office. They sometimes they had one man had to hold two offices. That was back in the father, 1856, and the war didn't start until 61. So there was 5 years, and this ditch down here, that's a different story again. This creek that enters into the river down below the church, you know where that is, anyway, that was dug by a man by the name of Hayden. Lumbering days, they floated the logs down the creek, you see, and it had to go down through Ross's, down through the other part, and connect with the river, way down Leech district. Well, and this way, by digging the channel in high water, they could raft a log one at a time, big logs, I imagine they'd be, into the river and float them down. And then they had, I guess they had what was called the boom. They had to corral these separate logs, you see, and form them into rafts, or follow them down and collect them in a boom in Saginaw. Of course, that's beyond my recollection anymore than what I heard. I heard my father say that at one time he could jump across that ditch down here. So it wasn't very big, but the high water, you see, carried the logs down through there. So there must have been quite a little fog.
What were the Indians doing during this time?
Well, the Indian, of course, back in lumber days, The Indian was clever. Now, I don't know. I don't know just where they got their material, but at that time, I think after the Civil War, they were given tools and such like. The squaws made baskets, and I have a number of them. I have the one that last one made over here. Sarah Dutton. Nancy Dutton, it was. Not Sarah, Nancy. And the squaws made baskets, and they bundle them all up and peddle them around. That's trading again. They traded their baskets for meat, for clothing, and things like that. So I kind of maintained that the trading started from the Indian instead of shopping, as they tell today.
How about the men? What were they doing?
The men made, I guess you know what a peavey is, do you? You know what a cant hook is, of course.
Yes.
They made handles, they made axe handles, and they had lots of hickory, and they made wonderful axe handles. I tried to save some, but when my barn burned, I guess it got rid of a lot of my old relics up there. And they were clever at a lot of things. They worked in the lumber woods, the Indians, somewhat, and hunting was their big means of livelihood. And I'm going to tell you something else about the same old Dan Wheaton. He visited with me, maybe more, because I showed an interest, you know. He said when he was a boy of 8 years of age, he came with his family. Now, that must have been way down near the floodwoods at that time. And the Indians came from Mount Pleasant, St. Charles, and they formed a sort of a colony, and then they had certain days to go hunting. when they thought that the proper time would be, you see, to catch deer and big game for their winter supply. And he said that he was 8 years old, and he said when the men started out, they had gun time, and he says, I wanted to go, and my mom said, too young, Danny, too small, Danny, but he says, I still wanted to go. Apparently, from what he said, they left a gun, maybe more than one, in the cabin where they were, I don't know what it was, and he said that to please him, she says, here, Danny, you take this out and play with it. Whether she knew it was loaded or not, I don't know. But he says, I took it, and I felt a little better by carrying a gun just to play around with. He said, I didn't go very far from the camp. And he said that he saw what he thought was an ear. And he says, you know, my pa said, Danny, don't shoot till you're sure. He explained it all, you know. And he said, pretty soon I saw a little bit more. And then he says, I saw a head. And he says, I aimed and just turned my back and I beat it back to camp. And he said, nothing seemed to follow me. And he says, I thought, well, no, I have to see. And he says, I went back and walked. And he said, I saw this animal there. And he says, I got a long pole. And he says, I poke him and then I run again. And he says, I did that a number of times. Then he says, I went back. I took a pole. I poke him. Didn't move at all. I went back and I said to my mom, I shoot a bear. Oh, no, Danny, what you talking about? No, sir. He says, I shoot a bear. You come see me. And he shot a bear at 8 years of age.
Right here in this area.
Right down in Damon Township. Yeah, I could listen to the old fella. He talked. Oh, he's a little bit broken, but he could talk and explain it, you know,
Was he a spiritual leader? Was he a revival?
Yes, apparently he was a converted man in some way. There was an article in one of the papers not too long ago. I think I have that paper. And he imagined these sounds that he'd heard, you know. And there was an article. Well, whoever wrote the article did a pretty good job. I think I could improve on it a little. Maybe I couldn't. But in my memory and knowing him, maybe I could. But it went over. It's like lots of other things. They wrote a history of the church down here one time, and they're selling the books, and they went over big, and I bought one and gave it away. I says, my memory don't talk that way at all.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, you but nobody else knew it. Nobody else knew the difference. You know?
You mentioned a while ago the Ottawa, the Potawatomi, and the Chippewa.
Yeah.
Do you know of other tribes, or which were the more prevalent tribes here in Michigan?
Well, the time they had that slaughter here around Saginaw, I guess the Chippewas, I guess, were considered a peaceful class. They weren't so keen for war and blood and such like. But I'd have to go back on the history, I guess, to tell just how they came out. But I couldn't exactly tell, but I read a book, and I'd like to get that book again. I forget how many thousand different tribes, but it might be that more of these grouped as far as their language speech was concerned and all. Mm-hmm. More might have done that. I think Tom Robertson over here has that history, but gosh, you go down in Florida, and the Simmons down there, and then the Cheyennes are in Northern Wyoming, and they were all over. And that it goes to prove, and I don't know where the archaeology is going to figure out just who, but I dare say that There was people on my farm up there, here before the Indians, because I know proof of it. But the Stone Age, and this man, not one man, but two, he was he made a study of archaeology from Flint. He was kind of one of the up business in the Buick business there. Came here with a nice Buick. He'd been here several times and hadn't found me a home. It was near my birthday, and my wife had made a nice birthday cake, and he happened to find me at home. And at that time, I hadn't taken the things out of the house up there any more than we just came down here temporarily, just to get away from the snow a little bit, and we didn't make any particular, well, in moving, didn't make a business of it, just bring down what we needed once in a while, and I'd be back and forth, and such like, and So I told him that my collection, the most of it was up at the farm, and he went up there and didn't have any electricity. And he says, you know, if I had a collection like that, I wouldn't leave it in a vacant house. Well, I said, I think I'll take your advice, and I brought it down. He offered me a good price for some of it, and stood here visiting. My wife got a nice lunch on with my birthday cake and such like, and invited him, and he stayed and looked up. He says, is it that time? I think it's quarter after 12 or something. He says, how do I get back to Flint? He enjoyed it so much, you know. And later on, I found out that he attended the same church that a relative of mine attended in Flint, and I saw this relative not long ago. Well, he married into the family, and he said he passed on, but he traveled a good deal, and I think he made different trips here and there, sort of like these big vessels come into California, you know, come from the different states. They call them tramp steamers, and some of them are just stores on the boat. I enjoyed that too.
Do you recall when they brought electricity into this part of the country?
Oh, yes, they didn't have any electricity here. They didn't have any telephone. They didn't have any paved roads at all. The first road, they call them the Stone Road. Well, it was different than what it is now. They didn't have any tarvi at that time. They'd haul this crushed stone, put it on the road, and then they'd spray it with tar, and then they'd go to the roller and kind of roll it and flatten it down, one thing and another. But it was still a rough road, so to speak. And it came as far as, first came from Birch Run down within 2 miles, I guess, down the line here. But we didn't have any paved roads. As far as the bridge is concerned, that was built in 1885. And I can remember the first bridge down there. The first bridge was built during the Civil War. Because my namesake, my middle name is Horatio. I guess they brought that over from London or England anyway. And his uncle's name was Horatio. And his father died, his parents died when he was up with my folks quite a little bit when he was a boy. And then he stayed with a farmer across the river until he was 18, and then he went west. That's how I got connected with the western people down through there. And he said that he remembered the bridge runs straight to the Burt Road. You see, right straight through, and I guess that was the proper way for it to be. And then when it was all wood, but there was so much trestle all across the low ground, you see, that was hard to maintain on account of high water. Mm-hmm. And this, the bridge sort of settled, was just about where it is now. But they built another wooden bridge. And I remember the old bridge there. In the center of the bridge, they had piles driven, and then the timbers from each side, you see, and then the cross beams. Well, it served its day, and I can remember when it went down. I think I was about 8 years old at the time, and it settled down, and I had two saloons over here at the time, and then they'd come over, and he got, you know what Skinawabu is?
No.
That's liquor.
Skinawabu?
Skinawabu. Whiskey or liquor, white man's fire water, but Skinawabu. Well, the Indian got too much Skinawabu, and they had where the bridge settled, it was right 4th of July, and they had plank from either side where you could walk across, you know. Well, the Indian come over here, and I guess his squaw came over, and they didn't go around the road, they walked right along the river to their village, you see. And I guess she got him started for home, anyway. But he came down the hill. Well, the road wasn't as wide as it is now, but he was taking a good share of the road, getting down to the bridge. And then they had this plank. I don't know whether they had a single plank or two. It don't matter, no. Anyway, and he was pitching along a little bit at a time, and the boy said, yep, yep. The old fellow lost his balance. And he went into the water. Well, I guess the water was low. He only went in up around his arms anyway. I don't know whether it sobered him or not. But they hauled the material for the new bridge on that 4th of July. The present visit here. The west side, the piers gave way. I don't know if you've ever been under there or not. But they were huge, and they were filled with concrete. And the bridge rested on them, and then of course same as it is now. And I wasn't an engineer, although I might be interested in it, but you see, it wasn't stationary. On top of this concrete, these big pipes, and then they were braced so to support them. I was interested when they repaired the bridge too, because I lived here at the time and I spent quite a little time down there. And you'll notice there, instead of resting on the on the heavy top of it, just say, it's on rollers on account of expansion and contraction, mm-hmm. and weighting and such like. Now a dog could trot across that bridge and you'll hear the irons click, 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 and the horse will walk across there and it won't. Just a little chimp, 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 chimp like that.
You mentioned several times the Indian camp or Indian village. How many people, what was the village like?
Well, in my mind, John Jackson, he was the one I told is mighty intelligent. He had a place more towards the river. I can remember the house. And then there was the fishers. They were more up to date than now where Alec Jackson raised a family of 8 or 9 or 10, I don't know which. He had had twins, and I kind of kidded him about twin girls. And Alec says, "What do you think, John?" I think he's some relation to Pete. Anyway, I'll have to figure that out. And, I said, I just kind of wondered, Alec, what you're getting at. Anyway, raising two at a time. And he laughed. Alec worked for me and his whole family, in fact, all the good work and the beans up there. And then there was the fishers. They didn't seem as red. Their coloring as some of the others. Some of them I can remember way back, but some of them quite fair. And old Jim Fisher, somebody after the Civil War, must have been some years because I can remember it anyway, they gave him a stiff hat, maybe a hat that some of the higher ups there in Washington had worn, you know. And I'm telling you what, he looked pretty nifty with that stiff hat, just the same.
did they consider themselves part of a village or part of a camp, or would they just consider themselves private?
Well, as far as that was concerned, they didn't seem to interfere at all. Of course, they got acquainted with my folks, Lord Father's shotgun, as I tell about, and such like. And they had their medicine man. I don't know how that was, Dr. Cage, K-H, I guess the way they pronounced it or spelled it. And
what was his function? What did he do?
Well, he was a medicine man, a cure-all for the sick. And when my father, that's something else, that they had an affliction here before my time, called ague. It's a fever. Mm-hmm. And nearly everybody had it. And they even said that trees even shook. You just couldn't maintain yourself. You know, just like palsy. Mm-hmm. And the father said the time of the fire, well, they called it the time of the Chicago fire, that it was about the time that Chicago burned up. They had a fire through here, but I don't think that had anything to do with that before my time.
Was that in Tuscola County or something?
It was all over. All over. Another one. I got a book on some of that. And Father said he's just taken full the leaves away from the earth and get the smell of the fresh earth instead of that smoke. Well, they had old Cage, and the way he did it, he compounded his own medicine, had it portioned off different places, and the vomit, you see.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he explained it. If one didn't do it, take another one, two, whoop, vomit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can just remember, I can't remember old Cage, the Dr. Cage, I can remember the Fishers, and a lot of them I didn't know, but from the time, well, this Miles Barrett, right, Miles died yesterday, lives down the line here, just this side of the village, almost across from where Richie Hart lives there. But it was this side where John Jackson, but you might say, now I don't know the extent or how far they went for their, what they called their village, but it covered a whole street down, it might have gone, I don't know how far down, but they followed the river.
2 or 3 miles?
I don't think the village was quite, it might have been scattered a little bit, but the old Dan Wheaton, he's buried over here, his little old house, and you'd wonder, most of the Indians had trouble with their eyes. George Saban, I could go through with the different ones, I guess I did start a story, I don't know that I finished it even. George was a big husky fellow, and an Indian never cared to walk on the highway. We didn't have very many highways anyway, any more than trails. No work done. We had the path masters, they called them, kind of fill up the holes and such like, so that you get through with a team and wagon. But that was about it. No graders to grade the road. Things like that.
What did they call them? Pathmasters?
Pathmasters. They had, nine. We had 9 school districts here, and I think they had a pathmaster in each district. Well, anyway, the pathmasters was done away with in this way. They were elected at caucus, or election, and I don't know how they got $1 a day, and that wasn't every day, but when they were when they were doing their work anyway. But the different places, now there's a ravine there, the Indian must have been, whether it was a higher power that guarded him or not, but they found that spring, and that was a big thing, you see, to get pure water. And there was another spring on the north road down near where that third line cut through, or goes through my place. Not the third line, but the 3-foot line. I got two of them over there. I will have this summer, I guess. And as far as the Indian was concerned, you asked about the Indian's job was to supply the table. If it was hunting, fishing, and I guess there's lots of fish, lots of squirrels. Now, if I don't get all my story, I have to tell you a little story about that. There was an Irishman lived down on the Canada Road, and a neighbor a little farther along, German, and they were good neighbors. And one was telling about how many squirrels he'd shot in a day. Well, this German McNally, first of all, I think it was 26 or 8 or something like that, he'd shot in a day. Well, it weren't red squirrels. There were gray squirrels and black squirrels, and they may have been fox squirrels. I can't remember some fox squirrels so much. I remember the gray squirrels and the black squirrels and the red squirrels and chipmunks and flying squirrels and such like. But I had a flying squirrel for a pet one time. I used to have pets of nearly all kinds. Well, anyway, McNally was telling about, he's a buttonhole relation to Lou up here way back. And so he was telling about 20 some odd, and Mathis wasn't going to be deep, so he had his up in the 30 somewhere. And McNally says, well, he says, Mathis, he says, oh, I'm telling the truth. He says, yeah, he says, so am I telling the truth. They didn't call him a liar, but he doubted his word. But I guess they could go out. I know my folks, they depended a whole lot on that. And the first, about the quickest meat they could raise, aside of chickens, and even that, the chickens, the sheep. They nearly all kept sheep, and then they would keep a nice fleece. There was something else in the farm there, a spinning wheel. Gosh, where they used to just have the wool carded, washed, carded, spun into yarn. And gosh, I don't know that I ever saw a girl in school that was big enough to wear socks, home net. And that was the way it was with mittens and such like. I think I got a pair of mittens in here somewhere now that made from wool, spun, and knitted. Nearly everybody could knit. Even the men used to knit. I never did, but back in the early days, they used to knit. But the Indian had nearly everything that was needed. And then, when they passed the law and they gave up their tribe and became citizens, it was a hard blow, and I guess there's where the trouble is in the Dakotas today. They're not giving up. Here, when they had to find some other place to get their hickory for axe handles, peavey handles, axe handles, and things like that, the squaws didn't get the ash to make their baskets and such like. And when it came to a lot of other things, of course, they were deprived. And I guess it was a hard blow on them. I think if the Indian had had somebody, some missionary or somebody to represent them, they might have been in better shape. But very little left down here where the Indians own any land at all. Mm-hmm. But it was quite a territory. Some of them farmed. Joe Hart, Richie's dad, and some of them worked down there. And then the Duttons, that's only a surmise on my part, I kind of figured that maybe the Duttons, some of the Duttons, maybe had a little French in them. As a rule, an Indian doesn't grow a very heavy beard. Mm-hmm. But some of the Indians had, they could grow a pretty good mustache. Mm-hmm. Memories. Well, I don't know. I hope you won't think I'm boasting, but it kind of gets out of my system to have somebody to talk to, really, because there's nobody here to talk to.
Mr. Eden, you live long, and you've lived a good life. What do you see for Saginaw, for Michigan?
Well,
what do you see in the future?
I never hankered after any office, township office at all. Of course, I knew my father was, and he had kind of ups and downs. After I was married, up here on the farm, a few years, I was elected township clerk, and